in Congress.
Now, you met Alice Paul then?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I certainly met Alice Paul.
What were your... can you remember what you got down there? You must have been really excited and everything.
Yes.
You went by... You were all alone.
I was all alone. Well, yes, I was alone. I met... You know, they picked it in four in a group.
Mm-hmm.
So I met the other four only at the... in Washington at headquarters. And one of them was Peggy Johns, who was from New York. The other girl's name, I do not remember, but she was in the needle industry, organizer in New York. And the fourth person was a lawyer, either from Wyoming or Arizona or some western state.
How long had you been at the headquarters there before you went out?
I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But several days, you know.
So you got familiar with everybody then? Before
yes. I think that probably we started picketing second or third day that I was there. Because we picketed several days before we were finally hauled in and arrested.
Now the same four of you picketed each of those days?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The same. See, what they did, as soon as four of the group were arrested, then they sent out another group of four. There was a continuous picket line,
mm-hmm.
and that's what drove the policemen crazy. You know, they saw no end to the number of women who were picketing. But the thing is that in the beginning, for several months, they were chastised or given 3 days in the city jail, or anyhow, they weren't branded in the sense that they were sent to a workhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came, they had already started sending women, giving them 30 days, and sending them to Occoquan Workhouse.
So you knew
that I would probably be arrested, but as I said, that sounded very exciting to me.
Did they prepare you for it at all in any way?
Well, I think they probably gave me a story about it, but we were quite capable. We started the brutality at the workhouse, so that shows that my group was a very capable group.
How old were the others in your group? Were they older?
Well,
than you?
They were between my age. I say they were around between 25 and 35.
Then do you remember each group of pickets had a banner, didn't they?
I don't know. I don't remember whether we each carried one banner or whether the four of us carried a long banner, you know,
mm-hmm.
with four posts on it.
Do you remember what they said, the ones
no.
in your group?
I should remember because it was in my mind for many years, but I'd forgotten. You know, it's very easy to forget after so many years, and if you don't come across it, you just forget. There are two books on the subject that have been published, you know. Have you read them?
I read Uphill with Banners Flying, the story of the National Women's Party.
Well, that was the second book that was written. The first one was written by a woman whom I knew, and I can't remember her name.
Not Inez Irwin.
Who?
Inez Irwin.
How many books were written on the subject that you found?
The only one that I found, well, there's one written by Doris Stevens about the treatment in the jail.
Doris Stevens is the one.
Then the other one was Inez Irwin, which is the story of the whole party and the picketing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a much broader one. Well,
now, Doris Stevens didn't know that it was my group that started the brutality and the first real, confrontation that we had with the prison administration was through my group.
Okay, well, before the prison part, can you describe more of what happened with the picketing? Were you harassed while you were picketing?
Oh, we were terribly harassed. You know, there were always men and women standing out there harassing us and throwing some pretty bad insults and pretty obscene ones.
Mm. The women, too?
Well, the women weren't obscene, but the men were quite obscene. And during that period, somebody shot right through the open windows of the little White House of the headquarters, could have killed any woman that happened to be in the right position for it. And we couldn't get police protection. We couldn't get it, you know. The police, as I said, left us alone, but when the crowd got too noisy and the police couldn't get rid of them, then they hauled us in for obstructing traffic, you know.
How large a crowd would gather every day?
How was it?
How large a crowd would gather?
I don't remember.
But
it seemed pretty big to me.
How did you feel about all this? Were you frightened?
Oh, I was brave. My goodness, I was fighting for a cause, you know. I didn't pay attention to them.
Now, how did it work? Would the four people stand there all day, or did someone come in?
I don't remember. We probably must have had shifts on it. And I don't think that we were there all day. I think we were there so many hours. Because it's, or we did have shifts. I don't remember. What did Doris Stevens say about it? Do you recall? You know, I had two books and I gave them both away. But I'm like that, you know, when I value a thing very much and I value a friendship, I give what I value, you know.
Because they're very difficult to get.
But it's so sad because the book that I had was a Doris Stevens book.
No.
And you know, the National Organization for Women learned about me only when I sent an article into the to the bulletin, and they couldn't believe it. I looked too young to have been in that fight. And they went to the library and picked up a book and found my maiden name there. Well, they recognized it by my first name. I was the only Ernestine. But they couldn't find the picture. It's awfully hard to find a picture of a 21-year-old.
Well, I have some of the pictures of the picketing groups, but they're so hard to see who's who in them.
Yeah, it is very hard. I happen to know what kind of a hat I wore. I happen to recognize myself, and that's all. But you have to, one book, the Doris Stevens book had many pictures in it.
And you were in one of those pictures?
I was in one of those
pictures.
Oh, I'll
have to get it from the library again and have you show me which one you were.
Yes, because I had to show it to, do you know any of the girls that know? Tony
or
Caballo. Is it Caballo or Carabillo?
Carabillo. I'll have to get the copy out of the library again and have you show me which one was here.
I wonder if the book could be bought anyplace.
It's very hard to find those. Very difficult. Tomorrow I'm going to be seeing Marjorie Longwell from the National Woman's Party. She's still with them. And I'm going to see if she can get me some copies of those books. They probably
some copies? Extra. You'd be lucky to get one copy.
Yeah, no, but I mean one of each of those. They may have
one of each.
Still at their party.
Yes. Yes,
so you were picketing for a couple of days then before the arrest?
Well, I don't really know how long I picketed. I cannot tell you that. I do not remember. But on one of the picketing days, where the police hauled us in and took us to jail, we were bailed out right away. And then we appeared in court. And the judge, when he asked me how old I was, and I said 21. He was so mad, you know, he couldn't believe it. But he had to believe it because he knew that one thing that the suffrage party was very insistent about was age.
Mm-hmm.
That we had to be 21 or over. We couldn't march otherwise. We couldn't participate, you know, in that fight. And so we were given 30 days.
You were sentenced not at the time we were.
We were bailed out first, mm-hmm. and then we appeared in court, and then the judge sentenced us. See, before then, only the hardcore criminals like Alice Paul was given 30 days. Some of the others were given 10 days or 3 days. I think that the 3-day ones were spent at the city jail. But after we were sentenced, we were taken directly to the city jail. And that's where we cooked up our political prisoner demand. We were political prisoners. We were not guilty of obstructing traffic. We were not guilty of the sentence as charged. And therefore, we did not owe any kind of work in the workhouse. Because that workhouse was a real workhouse. you worked or else. So we didn't work, so we were or else. And that's the beginning of the real fight at the workhouse. In the jail, when we were there overnight and taken during that evening, we made all this decision. We were not going to work. We were going to ask all the other women already, the suffrage women already in jail, to accept our decision. And whatever happened, happened, you know.
There were already a group in when you went in then.
There was a group of either 9 or 12 women. I do not remember. It was in between. Mm-hmm. Either we made the 12 women or we made 16 women. It seemed like a rather large crowd to me, so I think that that we made the 16 women when we got there. Now I'm giving you the real story of the prison experience. If I didn't smoke so much, I wouldn't be coughing. When we got there, we had an immediate discussion with the other women and told them our decision, and they were very enthusiastic about it. They accepted it without question. So the next day, we appeared in the workroom, and we just sat there with our hands in our laps. I don't know when the superintendent began to talk to us, but it wasn't long before he asked, would we at least please hold the work in our lap, that we were demoralizing the other prisoners in that workroom. And what we were making, I suppose, were sack dresses for the prisoners, you know, because that's all we wore, was just sack dresses. And we said no. She said that if we, since we decided that we were unjustly arrested, that we were political prisoners, that it would be just as wrong for us to hold the work in our hands as it was for us to sew it, that we were going to abide by our decision, and that we had to be respected as political prisoners. Well, this went on for 26 days. But before then, my friend Peggy Johns became ill, and she was taken to the hospital. And believe it or not, she was in the hospital the entire time for 26 days. We were supposed to have 30 days there, but we lost the 4 days or the 5 days off for good behavior the first day we were at the city jail where we raised Cain. Or perhaps at the workhouse where we refused to work. Because all the women in that room took an example from us, and they also refused to work. And there was nothing they could do about the whole room. I think that there probably were about a dozen other women in that workroom. I really don't remember. It was a fairly big room, but it didn't seem crowded. But one day I went to see my friend. I used to visit my friend in the hospital every day. And this day I went to see her and she wasn't there. So I asked the nurse, what happened to my friend? She said, I don't know. And I asked all the other nurses, whoever was there. She said, we don't know. Just go and ask the superintendent. So I rushed into the other building. And there was a long hallway, the dining room at one end, and the long hallway to the superintendent's office at the front. And as I walked along the hallway, there was Peggy, all dressed up in her civilian clothes. And I said, Peggy, where are you going? She says, they're taking me to the psychopathic ward in Washington, D.C. Go tell the other girls, and all of you rush back here. So I did. I rushed back, and I told the girls what was going on. And we all rushed into the office, and the superintendent was absolutely dumbfounded when he saw us, you know. He just thought that he would be able to steal her away without us knowing anything about it. And if it hadn't been that I was her very loyal visitor, I wouldn't have known a thing about it, and we wouldn't have found out But I think that eventually we would have found out, you know, because through what happened afterwards. Well, when we got into that office, we told them that he can't do that, that she will have to be picked up by our lawyer in Washington and taken to the hospital, that she cannot be sent just by the prison alone, you know, that we had no assurance what would happen to her, and that above all things we want security for our women, and he wouldn't abide by it, you know. And so one of the women rushed to the telephone to phone our headquarters in Washington, and he rushed over too, and they just tore the phone right off the wall. And that's the time that he called in deputies. And you know, of all the dirty tricks, he called from Negro girls, you know, coming there. And I'm telling you, they beat the hell out of us, you know. I was so little, I was scared to death to get in the crowd, and I was on the outside. But I saw women on the floor and being trampled, and the Negro girls, you know, considering how badly they were treated, they got the most intense joy out of beating the hell out of the white women, you know. And the superintendent was so frightened when he saw the zeal with which these women were beating us, he didn't want us killed or hurt in any way, because he would be held entirely responsible, that he had to call in the deputies, the men deputies, to haul the Negro girls off of us and get them outside. So that was the time that he allowed us to call Washington. So we called the headquarters and told them what was going on. And the lawyer met, Peggy was sent to Washington. And the lawyer met her and took her to the hospital, or wherever he took her. Anyway, she wasn't taken to the psychopathic ward, although I think that her illness was perhaps contrived. The food was so bad that it was all we could do to eat it.
Now, this was before the hunger strikes, though everybody was eating at this time.
Yeah, this is before the hunger strike. Everybody was eating. The next group was the hunger strike. The one that followed us was the hunger strike. And that was another decision that was formed by the women. Now, Alice Paul was still in jail when we were sent back. After we finished our 30 days, we were sent back together with other women. You know. But Alice Paul, I think, hadn't quite finished either her 30 days or she had 60 days. I don't remember.
She was in jail the same time.
I think she was still in jail. She was in jail when we got there, together with about 9 or 12 other women. And they were all arrested at different times, so their period would expire at different days, too.
Now, you were in jail, did she make decisions for the group, or did the group really decide together?
Well, the group really decided together. See, we talked, you know. All we could do was talk. We couldn't read. I don't know why. I don't know whether you read or not. But since we were all sitting at one table, we did a great deal of talking. And as to how to comport ourselves, and I don't remember. You know, I really don't remember. But I know that we did a great deal of talking, and we also had certain walks, prescribed prison walks through the gardens there. It was a lovely fall time of the year. You know, the leaves were turning red and they were falling and the air was fresh. But the food was the greatest problem that we had there. It's just unbelievable, the worms that was found in the oatmeal we ate, in the soup we ate. I don't remember what else we were given to eat. I don't remember anything else. The coffee was God knows what. It wasn't coffee. It might have been chicory. Or whatever is chicory, roasted peanuts.
It's a root.
A root, roasted peanuts. I think peanuts are probably too expensive, you know. And some of the women were actually on a hunger strike already there. They just couldn't eat. The only thing they could eat was bread, if it wasn't moldy. and if it didn't show rat tracks, you know, you know, that prison was paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to feed us, and it raised beautiful vegetables. We had none of it, and it raised all the food that was necessary to maintain that prison, besides a great deal more that it could sell on the outside. But instead they bought this old stuff that's been rancid and in warehouses heaven knows how many years, you know, and fed us that. Of course, in those days, a lot of food had worms in it, and you had to be careful when you bought it. You had to eat it right away. The prison didn't buy the food right away, and it didn't cook it right away, and it bought the worst of all possible foods anyway, and it was all loaded with worms. I just didn't know what to do. I used to pick out the worms, and if I found some clean oatmeal or clean soup, I'd eat it. But most of us lost a lot of pounds in that during the 30 days in that jail.
Yeah, did you spend the whole 30
days? And incidentally, we weren't there 30 days. After they sent Peggy back to Washington, I think the next day they sent us back. We spent 3 days in the city jail. The superintendent didn't want us any longer, and he maneuvered to get us moved out of there and to spend the rest of the time in the city jail, because I remember now we were at least 2 days, if not 3 days, in the city jail. But we had all kinds of notoriety, you know. The newspaper men came to interview us, and they'd even bring us food from the outside. And the food in the city jail was much better than the workhouse. But we were mad. We were so darn mad. And they put us in solitary confinement, two in each cell.
This was in the city jail?
This was in the city jail, and this is after all this fracas at the workhouse. And I remember that after we ate, we take the the tin plates and throw them through the bars of the gate, you know, the doors, right at the windows. I think we broke some windows. We raised so much hell that I tell you the prisoner was glad to get rid of us. We were demoralizing the other prisoners, you know, in the place. And also, I was smoking then, and I remember giving one of the girls some money to buy me cigarettes. I never got them. She probably spent the money on dope, you know. Oh, it was really funny. I mean, we learned one thing, that never, never buy anything through the prisoners in a jail. Never, because you'll never get it nor the money back.
In Occoquan, were you in a cell altogether? How many were in
No,
a cell
we were there? In dormitories. We were all in dormitories.
And all of you were in the same dormitory?
We were in the same dormitory. I think all the women were in the same dormitory. And we took turns washing ourselves every morning. I don't know how many places. There were several places there. And we just took turns washing ourselves. And then dressing and going to the into the dining room to eat our worm food. That was the most, to me, that was the most terrible part of the whole prison.
Was the food.
And we all suffered. One woman almost was terribly sick when she was taken out of there, because she just couldn't eat. She came from a wealthy family. You know, some of those women, I think two of them, had husbands and fathers, senators, or House of Representatives in the Congress, you know. And one of them came from an extremely wealthy family, and it was, to her, it was actually going to prison was a real sacrifice, you know. After all, I came from a very poor family, but our food was always clean, and it was the first time that I was confronted by worms, you know. And these were outstanding, because there were so many of them, you know. I know that often I just leave the food. I just couldn't eat it. I just couldn't go through the job of picking out the worms, you know, or weevils, or whatever they were. it was really miserable in that fashion, because otherwise we weren't punished, you know. There was nothing the superintendent could do if he refused to work.
But well, every day you would go to the workroom and refuse and just sit there the whole day?
We'd just sit there all day long, except when we went out, I think twice a day we went out for our constitutional, as they say.
Now, was the Boutette, was there any beating up of the women except for that one occasion?
That was the only occasion, as I said, that was the only brutality that we suffered. But the next group that came in went on a hunger strike, and they were brutally treated. Women, groups of women who were arrested after us were really brutally treated. And you read that in Doris Stevens' book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also remember the incident that you were talking about where the deputies were called in. Is either in that or in the National Women's Party book, one of them. I'm not sure which. I remember reading an incident.
Well, that was in the book. I don't remember.
I
know that what was not in the book and evidently wasn't considered important to mention was the fact that it was my group who decided mm-hmm. in declaring all women, all suffragettes as political prisoners. And that really raised quite a mm-hmm. different tinge to the whole struggle, see. We were political activists, and when we were arrested, we were political prisoners. Arrested on trumped-up charges, obstructing traffic, and some other equally...
Do you recall how you arrived at, the group arrived at the decision?
How we arrived at the decision? Well, we discovered Peggy Johns was a truly political person in that group, you know. And she's the one suggested it. Mm-hmm. And we all agreed with her. I'm surprised that the trade unionist didn't mention it first, but she, a trade unionist doesn't necessarily find experience in political prisoner activities. And Peggy Johns evidently knew quite a good deal about political prisoners and mentioned it, and I didn't even think of it, if I thought at all. Mm-hmm. Which I was actually, I was immature in many ways and mature in other ways. I had a very unbalanced type of mind at that time.
Was the decision made before your sentence, or was it once you were in the city jail?
No, just when we were, the first time that we went, when we were arrested, we were taken to the city jail and kept there overnight and taken to the Occoquan prison in a bus the following morning. Their bus. Mm-hmm. I think there was their bus. It might have been a public bus. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember. It seemed to me it was their bus. Mm-hmm. One of the experiences we had was that we talked quite at length with one of the other prisoners at the workhouse who had been there, who had been arrested I don't know how many times. And we asked, well, how did that happen? And she said that, first of all, she was a drug addict, a heroin addict. And that she would be arrested, and she would be given a sentence and sent to this prison. And then when her sentence was over and she arrived in Washington, the first person she met was a policeman. What's your name? Where do you live? Well, after you've been in prison, you have no address, you know. And immediately she was hauled back to the courthouse and given another sentence, and sent back to prison again. And she told us that this will probably happen again, unless she could be met by someone, someone who would claim that she was a relative or something. So we arranged to have one of our women at headquarters declare her as a friend or something, declare her as... what do you call the children that are...
Like a ward?
not a ward, but...
A custodian or something?
Another word that's common, and I can't think of it. And that happened, so we took her to the headquarters, and she was there 2 or 3 days, and one day she wanted to go for a walk, you know. And they couldn't stop her, you know, I mean, after all, you can't stay in one building all day long. And chose me to go along with her, but told me not to let her, under any circumstance, leave me, but to walk with me and come back with me. You know, I lost her. It was, I knew that I couldn't keep her. She was a big woman. She must have been about almost a whole foot taller than I am and heavy set. And we came to a building, and she said she wanted to see somebody, and she was only to be gone a minute, and I argued with her until I saw it was hopeless, so I had to let her go. I couldn't, there was nothing I could do, absolutely nothing I could do. She never came down, so I came back and told the people, well, they knew they couldn't, they knew there was nothing they could do. And aside from which, these prisoners are never without drugs in the jails. She was given drugs, she bought drugs somehow or other, in some way or in some fashion, she was able to get drugs at the workhouse, so that she really had drugs whenever she needed it.
How did the other women at the workhouse, the other prisoners, react to the suffragists?
Well, as I said, when they saw we weren't working, they took heart, they became real courageous, and they wouldn't work either. And that's what bothered the superintendent. He wouldn't have cared if they worked. You know, he wouldn't have cared so much if they worked. But it was the fact that we were inspiring these women to be brave and not work either. And we probably told them, he said, don't you work either. He said, join us. So they joined us. I imagine this is what we told them. I don't really know. I don't remember.
Do you recall your trial? What happened at the trial itself? Did you all make statements or what?
Well, we all made statements. We were not obstructing traffic. The traffic was obstructing us, you know, which was true. What is the other petty charge that you have? Obstructing traffic.
Loitering.
And loitering. I don't know. And we weren't doing either one of them. We were marching, there were only four of us. We told them that since we couldn't possibly obstruct traffic, we were on the street, we took only one, there was only one row of us, there were only four of us, there was plenty of room. But unfortunately, a lot of people stopped and they obstructed traffic. But none of them were arrested, except us. We were very bold.
Did you make statements about suffrage at the trial?
Oh, we tried, but we didn't get very far. Oh, yes, we always made statements. Besides which, we had a lawyer. And I'm trying to think of his name. He was very famous. He fought for women's suffrage for years. And I can't think of his name. He was in that book also.
Yeah, I remember. I can't recall his name either.
Yeah.
Were you actually picketing or were you sentinels? Did you stand in one place with the banner or did you picket?
We were walking.
You were walking.
Right in front of the gates. That's all, walking back and forth, just in front of the gates.
Did you have that purple and gold and white banner?
Yes, oh yes, we had that. Mm-hmm. I remember now that we had, those were the colors, you know. And then there must have been a saying on it of some kind, because otherwise, you know, you just can't have a plain poster or just a plain banner without something on it to draw attention to the people passing by.
Out of all the people passing by, were they all hostile? Did you get any support?
Well, we had some support, but it was... but you took your life in your hands if any of the bystanders supported us. You know, they could be beaten by the rest of the crowd.
How did you handle the bystanders? Did you just ignore
them? We just ignored them. This is our instruction. Just absolutely pay no attention to them. And then towards the end, I know they started throwing stuff at the women. You know, we had no police protection whatever. Absolutely none. The only protection we had was when we were hauled, when we were arrested, that we were protected.
When you were arrested, was it the four of you were in one van, and they took you off?
I suppose so, or in one car, whatever it was, you know. Well, all four of us would be arrested at one time, and immediately the lawyer or somebody was at the city jail to bail us out.
So you weren't really in jail very long, were you? At the rest.
No,
of the
we were probably there an hour, you know.
How long did you have to wait for your trial to come up then?
I don't remember, but it wasn't very long. You know, after all, they had to board us, and that cost money. Mm-hmm. But they really got a lot of money. They got a lot of contributions.
Once you knew you were going to be going to jail, then how did you feel? Were you getting?
Well, I already knew. As I said, I knew that in New York, mm-hmm. you know, because Catherine told me, says, you might go to jail. You might be arrested. I said, that's all right. But I could have gone again to jail.
Well, when you got out of the workhouse, they sent you the last 3 days back to the city jail then.
Yeah.
And then you got out of there and you went back to the headquarters.
To headquarters. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how long I stayed there. And then I went back to New York.
And while you were there?
And it wasn't very long after that that Catherine Hodges wrote and told me that if I wished to come to Everett, she'd be very pleased to lend me the fare, which I never had enough money to pay back, you know. And I was very glad to get out of New York. You know, this was another experience, you know.
How did you feel on your release about it all, after you were released from prison?
Well, I felt, in a sense, horrified by the different things that could happen to you in a prison. It wasn't as exciting as I thought it would be. It was exciting in a frightening way, but not exciting in a joyous way. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I would have liked... See, that was one reason why I decided not to go back again on the picket line and then be tried again and sentenced again. Because I would have been sentenced a second time, mm-hmm. and even given 60 days, I doubt it. I probably would have received 30 days. But after 30 days of that dreadful food, mm-hmm. and the fear of what might happen to the next suffragette contingent that was arrested, I didn't want mm-hmm. to go back. I just wasn't that courageous enough, you know, because it did take courage to go back again. And none of the women and the in my contingent, none of the four women signed for another...
Oh, none of them did?
No, uh-huh. None of us did.
Did you keep in touch with the other women at all?
Well, the only one that I kept in touch with was Peggy, because she lived in New York, and so did I. So I saw quite a bit of her in New York until I went west. Uh-huh. And then I didn't see her again until... about 12 years ago, I visited England, and I got her address through a man who was writing a biography of Eugene O'Neill. He had a letter in all of the newspapers throughout the country asking for anyone who knew Gene, who had any information, that he would be very pleased to receive it because he was writing this book. So I wrote him. And in the correspondence, I mentioned the prison mm-hmm. experience. And he wrote back, he says, you know, Peggy Johns is still alive. She's a sturdy old lady. And I tell you, I was thrilled when I heard it. I wanted her address right away. I got it, and I wrote to her. And she wrote back, Dearest Ernestine. But you know, she wasn't so impressed with me when she saw me in person. And to me, she looked like a grand dame, you know. I went with her and with this, the writer left us. He had work to do. But I went with Peggy, and she took me to the bars in the village. You know. I was staying with a friend of my sister's in the village, so it was just merely walking around from one bar to another. And one of them, I noticed that every time a young girl came in, she'd go over and kiss Peggy on the cheeks. And I thought that was so delightful to see that sort of thing. Nobody ever did that to me. But they did it to Peggy. But we weren't impressed, you know. And although she invited me to come and visit her, I didn't visit her. Then I met an old boyfriend of mine whose name I'd even forgotten. You know, this was after so many years. I was a young girl in those days, those early days, and she was disgusted with me.
Tell me, what were your impressions of Alice Paul at that time?
Well, she was a very serious woman, you know. And my impression of her was of a very serious, dedicated person. And this is all I could tell you about her, because there was nothing else that I could mention that would stand out in my mind.
Did she seem charismatic?
Did she seem how?
Charismatic.
Well, I wouldn't say so. As I said, she was extremely serious, and I had the vision of a very serious, dedicated suffragette, you know. And if she had charisma, I hadn't noticed it.
Do you recall any of the other women at the headquarters there that you met?
Well, yes, I recall a number of them, but I don't remember their names anymore. I'd recognize them if I saw their names, if I had the book and saw their names.
But you didn't keep up any association with them?
No, I only one woman, besides Peggy, only one other woman lived in New York, and I think this woman who was with us lived in New York, the trade unionist, and you know, and I didn't keep up in touch, I didn't keep in touch with her at all.
The experience of being in jail together didn't make any bonds?
I don't know, I just didn't, no. It's just with Peggy. And, but Peggy was a little woman, she wasn't much taller than I am, so maybe we just stood together, you know, and supported one another, you know, gave us this additional muscle, you know, we needed.
When you went back to New York, then you had no thoughts of any continuing thing with the women's movement.
No, I really didn't. You know. But I mean, I would engage in any parade they had or any big affair they had. But I had to, because you see, I wasn't even in favor of citizenship. I wasn't political in that regard. I couldn't see. The only thought I had in mind was that voting didn't help the working people, and that all that would happen is to add so many more votes. But that nevertheless, it had the illusion of equality in it, and it really was an illusion. Because Alice Paul has been fighting for equal rights ever since then, and we only gained it just last year.
No, not yet. We still need eight more
I mean,
states.
At least it passed Washington.
Yeah. Mm.
And how many states do we need now?
I think 11 more.
11 more. We need 38?
Yeah, I think there are 27 now. We need
Did 38. We get 27?
This I is think remarkable. There's now 27.
That's remarkable, because I haven't even been reading that in the paper. I hadn't even seen any news of it in the paper. But we had only 18 the early part of last year.
I think there have been several since California.
And of course, you know, there are the radical left has no use for the ERA, but they are quite wrong, because you have to fight for each thing separately.
Yeah,
it may take hundreds of years, but we have to fight for, you know, talk about wage discrimination will be one of the hardest of all the battles that we have coming to us, you know. And aside from the fact that that in negotiating wages, unions have the hardest fight of any other demand that they may make, you know. And really the differential between male and female wages is much too great to tolerate, you know. And women, so many women they are aware of it and they just take it for granted that that's the division of sexes.
Yeah, that's
you
what
know.
It should be. Yeah.
Is that still on?
We're almost done.
Oh.
So immediately, almost right after you got back to New York then, she
I don't
wrote you about
I don't home. Remember. I don't remember. It must have been in 1917 that I went to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't seem so. It just seems... The picketing ended in 1918, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. So you probably weren't in New York too long before you went to Washington.
Well, it wasn't just that. I think that I picketed in 1917, but I'm not sure of it.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to see that book.
I'll check in that book where they list everyone.
Yeah.
But you don't recall any other events when you went back to New York before going to Washington? The next
Well, there were all kinds of events, but nothing